Welcome to the Pit Cop Podcast. I am Annabelle.
And I am Bill Pitcott.
And picture this for a second. It is midnight, right? You are craving something incredibly sweet, or, you know, maybe you're desperately trying to finish up this massive high-stakes baking project for a party the next day.
Oh, the midnight baking panic. We have all absolutely been there.
Yes. You put some chocolate on the stove, you turn your back for like 5 seconds just to grab a spatula, and suddenly you are scraping this burnt, grainy, rock-hard nightmare out of your favorite pot.
Staring at it, completely baffled by what just went wrong.
Exactly. But today, we are putting a definitive end to that midnight nightmare.
Where?
Our mission for this deep dive is mastering the absolute art of perfectly melted chocolate. We are going to teach you how to turn it into liquid silk literally every single time.
Every time. It is all about the science.
It really is. And I'm just bursting with excitement because the incredible methods and all the pure science we are unpacking today, they come entirely from Pitcott. Specifically, this is all sourced from the best-selling ebooks right on our ebook store.
Which are fantastic resources, by the way.
They really are. So if you want to follow along and, you know, become a chocolate master yourself, you absolutely have to visit www.pitcott.com/books to download them. Seriously, I mean, yeah. They will change how you bake forever.
They absolutely will. But before we get into the complex chemistry of cocoa butter, I want to request you to subscribe to our channel if you haven't. Activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads. And don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating. We appreciate you giving us a 5-star rating to propel this podcast to help others too.
Okay, let's unpack this, because I always used to think chocolate was just, you know, cocoa powder and sugar melted down together in some giant vat. But the Pitcott guides explain that it's actually an emulsion.
Right, an emulsion, which is crucial to understand.
Yeah, so that basically means it's this really tight, forced marriage between completely dry ingredients and fats, right? Yeah.
That is exactly the mechanism at play. It is not just one single uniform ingredient. You actually have cocoa solids, which is the dry, sort of bitter, incredibly flavorful matter of the cacao bean, and that is suspended directly in cocoa butter.
Which is the natural fat.
Exactly. Well, the natural fat. And then, of course, you add sugar to sweeten it, and if we were talking about milk chocolate, you throw milk powder into the mix as well. So it becomes this incredibly delicate structural balancing act.
And that structural balance is just entirely dictated by temperature. I mean, cocoa butter is notoriously fussy. It doesn't just melt in a simple linear way like ice turning into water.
Oh, not at all. It has incredibly tight temperature windows.
Right. So for dark chocolate, we are looking at a melting point right around 90 to 95 degrees Fahrenheit. Which, if you use Celsius, translates to like 32 to 35 degrees. That is basically human body temperature.
What's fascinating here is how that exact temperature window dictates the eating experience.
Mm.
That is precisely why a high-quality piece of chocolate begins to melt the literal second you put it on your tongue.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because your mouth is exactly that temperature.
Right. The thermal energy of your mouth is enough to completely break down that solid fat structure. Now, milk chocolate is even more thermally sensitive because of those added dairy fats we mentioned.
So it melts even faster.
Yes. That causes it to soften between 86 and 90 degrees Fahrenheit, or 30 to 32 degrees Celsius.
Mm-hmm.
But the real challenge, I mean, the diva of the baking world that requires the absolute most vigilance, is white chocolate.
Oh, white chocolate. The Pitcott material describes it so beautifully. It basically says white chocolate is essentially a house of cards.
That is a perfect analogy.
Because it has absolutely zero cocoa solids to act as a structural foundation. It is purely cocoa butter, sugar, and milk solids. And because it lacks all that dark, dense cocoa matter to kind of buffer the heat, any sudden temperature spike just completely collapses the emulsion.
It just falls apart.
Yeah, causing those sugars to fry and burn almost instantly. I've ruined so much white chocolate, it's not even funny.
It is so unforgiving. And what is truly fascinating here is how that physical vulnerability extends to its arch nemesis, which is water.
Oh my gosh, yes. Water is the ultimate enemy.
We all know extreme heat can burn it, but even a single microscopic drop of water splashing into your bowl will ruin an entire batch. It triggers this really violent chemical reaction known in the pastry world as seizing.
I have always wondered about the actual chemistry of seizing because, you know, I used to think seizing just meant the chocolate was physically burning from the bottom up. But it is actually a reaction with the sugar, isn't it?
Precisely. To really understand seizing, you have to look at the ingredients microscopically. The sugar that is pulverized inside the chocolate bar is completely dry.
Okay.
So when you introduce even a tiny drop of moisture, like, say, a bit of steam condensation falling from a pot lid, that dry sugar instantly absorbs the water.
And it dissolves.
Yes, it dissolves and forms this very coarse, incredibly sticky syrup. And that syrup acts exactly like superglue. It instantly binds all those free-flowing cocoa solids together into massive, ugly, dull clumps.
Oh, wow. So it's basically pulling everything out of the fat.
Exactly. The fat gets forcibly pushed out of the emulsion, and your beautiful, smooth liquid instantly seizes into this stiff, completely unworkable paste.
That is wild. It literally glues itself together from the inside out. That completely explains why the absolute golden rule of chocolate work is that every single bowl, every spatula, every cutting board must be bone dry.
Bone dry.
Like there's no, oh, I'm just rinsing a spoon and giving it a quick wipe with a towel kind of thing. It has to be completely devoid of any moisture.
Zero shortcuts allowed when it comes to moisture. None at all. And that extreme level of precision carries right over into the preparation stage as well. You cannot just take a giant, solid 1 pound block of chocolate, toss it into a glass bowl, and apply heat.
Right, because it won't melt evenly.
Exactly. You have to chop it uniformly.
Okay, let me push back on that for a second, though, because I know exactly what everyone listening right now is thinking. If I need small, uniform pieces of chocolate, why can't I just walk to my pantry, grab a bag of standard chocolate chips, and just toss those into the bowl? I mean, they are already perfectly uniform. Why am I doing all this extra labor of chopping a solid bar?
It is a very logical question. I completely understand why people do it. But it all comes down to commercial food engineering.
Engineering?
Yes. Those standard chips sitting in the pantry, they are chemically engineered specifically not to melt.
Wait, really? Not to melt?
Right. They contain industrial stabilizers, heavy emulsifiers, and very often substitute fats in place of real cocoa butter. Their entire biological design is to hold their distinct little peak shape at 350 degrees inside a baking chocolate chip cookie.
Oh, that makes so much sense. Because you want chunks in a cookie, not a puddle.
Exactly. So if you take those chips and try to melt them down for a smooth, velvety ganache, you are quite literally fighting their structural engineering. You will just end up with a thick, gloopy, totally grainy mess.
So what should we use instead?
You need to use couverture chocolate or high-quality baking bars.
Mm-hmm.
Those boast a very high percentage of pure cocoa butter and have absolutely zero palm oil substitutes.
Ah, okay, so you really have to respect the ingredients. Okay, so let's say we have our high-quality chocolate. It is perfectly chopped into uniform thumbnail-sized pieces, and it is sitting in a bone-dry bowl.
Perfect setup.
Knowing how delicate this whole emulsion is, we shouldn't just hit it with a blast of direct heat, right?
Mm.
What is the absolute gentlest, safest way to coax it into a liquid state?
The safest way, and honestly, this is one of the best kept secrets for home bakers handling large batches, is method one, the oven. It is a technique that relies entirely on ambient thermal heat rather than direct aggressive heat.
Right. So instead of a localized heat source literally scalding the bottom of a pan, we are just surrounding the bowl with a very mild, completely even temperature.
Exactly.
But how do we actually set that up without accidentally just baking the chocolate?
You start by setting your oven to its absolute lowest possible temperature. Ideally, you want it around 110 degrees Fahrenheit or 43 degrees Celsius. Then you just place your chocolate in a glass or ceramic oven safe bowl.
But what if my oven doesn't go down to 110? A lot of older ones don't.
Good point. If your oven is older and won't go that low, say the dial strictly stops at 150 or 170, you just turn it to that lowest setting, but you physically prop the oven door open a few inches with a wooden spoon.
I just love that trick because propping the door lets the excess heat escape constantly, right? So the internal ambient temperature just hovers right in that perfectly safe, gentle zone.
That is exactly the physics of it.
It is exactly like slow roasting a really tough, delicate cut of meat at a very low temperature versus just, you know, throwing it onto a blazing hot grill. You are just letting the surrounding environment do all the heavy lifting gently over time.
And because that ambient heat is so gentle, it is a completely hands-off process. You just leave the bowl in there, checking and stirring it maybe once every 5 to 8 months.
So you don't have to baby it?
Not at all. The thermal energy slowly transfers evenly through the bowl, softening the edges of the chocolate first. It never bubbles. And honestly, unless you abandon it for hours, it never scorches.
This method just seems so perfect for big projects where you don't want to be chained to the stove. Like, if you are making a massive chocolate glaze for a multi-tiered wedding cake, or maybe prepping a huge fondue station.
It is brilliant for fondue.
You just let the oven safely hold it in that perfect liquid state. But of course, you do need to be mindful of your own kitchen's environment. Like, if you are doing this in a sweltering, unair-conditioned apartment in the middle of July, everything is going to happen way faster.
Yeah.
A good digital thermometer is always your best friend.
Absolutely essential.
Actually, before we move from the slow, patient world of the oven to the high-speed chaos of the microwave, I have a quick reminder. All of this incredible science and these exact temperature guides we're discussing, they are all available from Pitcot. You just have to head over to www.pitcot.com to grab these resources. And please subscribe to our channel if you haven't, and activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads. Also, press the like button and rate us if you love our show. It helps in the recommendation algorithm so others can access it too. And don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating.
Highly recommend checking all of that out.
All right, so the oven method is great for bulk and it's great for patience. But let's play out another scenario here. Let's say I am in a bustling, high-stress pastry kitchen. I need a glossy ganache right now, and I cannot wait 45 minutes for ambient heat to do its thing.
Time is money in a kitchen.
Exactly. So how do professionals speed up the physics safely?
That brings us to method two, the professional standard, the double boiler, which is known classically in French kitchens as the bain-marie. This setup gives you active, immediate control over the heat transfer, but you have to know, it requires intense precision.
The setup here is so crucial. It's basically a medium saucepan filled with maybe an inch or two of water. Yeah. And then you place a heatproof glass or stainless steel bowl over the top.
Correct.
But the biggest mistake I used to make when I first started baking was letting the bottom of that glass bowl physically sit in the hot water.
Oh no, which completely defeats the entire purpose of the tool.
Right.
If the glass bowl physically touches the boiling water, you are right back to localized direct heat, which will instantly scorch the cocoa butter right at the bottom of your bowl. The mechanism of a proper double boiler relies entirely on steam. You have to bring that shallow water to a very gentle simmer, and absolutely never a rolling boil.
Because a rolling boil creates aggressive, violent steam. And what did we literally just learn about moisture? It is the absolute enemy.
The enemy.
If the water is boiling violently, it is going to splash microscopic droplets right up into your chocolate and instantly cause it to seize into a rock. Plus, you really want the bowl to fit snugly over the rim of the saucepan, right? To trap the steam underneath.
Exactly. If the steam billows out the sides, it's not just horribly inefficient. It is actively going to burn your hand while you were trying to stir the chocolate.
Safety first, always.
So the trap steam gently warms the bowl, which in turn slowly and completely evenly melts the chocolate. You use a perfectly dry rubber spatula to just fold the chocolate over itself.
Right.
It's a beautifully controlled, almost meditative method when done right.
It really is soothing.
And it is especially vital when you need to slowly incorporate other ingredients into the chocolate. Like if you are folding in heavy cream or butter to create a rich, glossy ganache.
Okay, but let's be real for a second. Sometimes you really do not want to mess with simmering water or constantly checking on propped open oven doors. You just need melted chocolate for some quick weeknight brownies and you want it in exactly 3 minutes.
The home baker's reality.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because I know what everyone is thinking. Microwaves are total chaos boxes. They heat things incredibly unevenly. How on earth do we use method three, the microwave, without just nuking the chocolate into a grainy rock?
You do it by establishing very strict physical boundaries. You have to respect the physics of a microwave.
Which are what exactly?
Well, microwaves involve bombarding food with electromagnetic waves, right? And these waves specifically target water and fat molecules, heating them incredibly rapidly. Since chocolate is absolutely packed with fat, that beautiful cocoa butter, it heats at lightning speed.
Okay, so it's a fat bomb.
Exactly. So if you blast it at 100% power, the exterior pieces in the bowl will literally cook and burn from the inside out before the centerpieces even register any warmth at all.
Wow. So the cardinal rule is low power, short bursts.
Always.
And you should always use a glass or ceramic bowl, right? Never plastic. Because I know plastic can warp or even create these little micro hot spots that ruin the temper of the chocolate entirely.
Correct. No plastic.
Mm-hmm.
You drop the microwave to exactly 50% power. You start with just 30 seconds, and when the microwave beeps, you take the bowl out, and here is the key step. You must stir it.
even if nothing looks melted.
Even if the chocolate looks completely solid and completely unchanged, you have to stir it.
Yes, because the microwave heats in microscopic isolated pockets, right? By stirring it manually, you are physically distributing that hidden thermal energy throughout the entire mat.
Precisely. Then you put it back in for 20-second burst, yeah. Strictly at 50% power. And if you were using our delicate friend, white chocolate, you actually have to drop that down to 15-second intervals.
Because it burns so fast.
Right. And actually, the exact same goes for very dark 70% cocoa chocolate.
Mm.
Because its density means it retains heat much longer and can very easily catch you off guard.
And that actually brings us to the ultimate pro move for microwave melting. This is my absolute favorite trick. It is knowing exactly when to stop. I call it the 80% rule.
It is a lifesaver.
You do not microwave the chocolate until it is a fully liquid pool. You stop the microwave when it is only about 80% melted. It's going to look unfinished. There will still be visible, shiny lumps of solid chocolate floating around in there.
But you pull it out anyway.
You pull it out anyway. And you just stand at the counter and stir it continuously for about 60 seconds.
That is vital. Because the residual heat stored in the melted chocolate liquid, plus the warmth of the ceramic bowl itself, contains more than enough thermal energy to melt those remaining lumps completely safely.
I always enthusiastically compare this to driving a car. Like when you see a red stop sign 50 yards ahead, you don't keep your foot slammed on the gas until you hit the white line and then just slam on the brakes.
That would be a disaster.
Right. You take your foot off the gas early and you let the car's momentum and residual energy coast you to a smooth, safe stop. If you microwave chocolate until it looks 100% melted inside the machine, you have basically already driven completely through the intersection and crashed. You've scorched it.
That is a brilliant way to visualize it. Coasting is exactly what you were doing. But, you know, if we connect this to the bigger picture, even careful bakers make mistakes.
Oh, definitely.
Sometimes the car just doesn't stop in time. So it is absolutely critical to understand what is happening structurally when a batch fails and how you might actually reverse it.
Yes. Let's play some chocolate triage. Pure disaster recovery. Walk us through some troubleshooting.
So, scenario one. Wow. I accidentally blasted my bowl on high power in the microwave. It is overheated, it smells distinctly burnt, and the texture is weirdly sandy.
Ah. I am afraid that specific structure is beyond saving for delicate pastry work. The extreme heat has actually permanently separated the cocoa solids from the fats, and it has burned the sugars.
So no dipping strawberries in that?
No, you cannot use it for fine dipping or glossy glazes. But
yeah.
You don't have to throw it out in the bin. Since the flavor profile is just slightly roosted at this point, you can chop that solid mass up and fold it right into a brownie batter or a heavy cake batter.
Well, that's smart, because the surrounding moisture and the heavy structure of the flour in the batter will mask that sandy texture entirely.
Okay, I love that. No waste. All right, scenario two. It is not burnt, but it is just relentlessly lumpy and it simply won't smooth out no matter how much I stir the bowl.
That usually means your initial preparation was flawed. You did not chop the chocolate finely or evenly enough to begin with.
Oh, so the big chunks are fighting the little chunks.
Exactly. The massive chunks are refusing to melt at the exact same rate as the small ones. The fix there is simply patience. You return it to the gentle steam of your double boiler, you keep the heat very, very low, and you just stir firmly. The thermal energy will eventually break down those stubborn chunks.
And finally, scenario three, the big one. Seized chocolate. A microscopic drop of condensation fell from my double boiler lid, the dry sugar grabbed the water, glued the cocoa solids together, and now I have a dull, grainy, cement-like paste. Is it truly dead?
Surprisingly, no. There is a miraculous chemical rescue you can actually perform here. Remember, seizing is simply the emulsion breaking because there isn't enough liquid to dissolve the sugar evenly.
Right, the sugar acted like super glue.
Exactly. So you force a brand new emulsion, you take hot, heavy cream or even boiling water, and you use exactly 1 tablespoon at a time, and you vigorously whisk it straight into the seized clump.
Wait. Add more water to fix water damage. Are you serious?
Yes, because a tiny microscopic drop of water acts as an insufficient glue, right? But a larger, steady volume of hot liquid provides enough overall hydration to dissolve that sugar completely and relax all the cocoa particles.
That is incredible.
You just keep whisking it in, literally a tablespoon at a time, until the paste suddenly loosens and transforms into a fluid, beautiful ganache.
Wow.
Now, you can't use it for a hard, snapping chocolate coating anymore, but it makes an absolutely incredible sauce or a truffle filling.
Okay, so we have talked all about rescuing absolute disasters, but what about when everything goes perfectly? Like when you bite into a premium chocolate bar, it has this brilliant glossy shine and it snaps cleanly and loudly in half. It doesn't just crumble or bend like soft wax.
That snap is iconic.
So what does this all mean? There's some serious science behind that perfect texture too, right?
There is. And honestly, it is my favorite part of chocolate chemistry.
Yeah.
The science behind that perfect texture is that chocolate is polymorphic.
Polymorphic.
Yes. That means the fat molecules inside the cocoa butter can stack together and physically crystallize into six completely different structural geometric shapes, depending entirely on exactly how they cool down.
Wait. Six different crystal structures from the exact same ingredient? That is unbelievable.
It is. And out of those six structures, only one specific structure, which is scientifically called form V or beta crystals, produces that tight, highly sought after glossy finish and that incredibly satisfying audible snap when you break it.
Okay, so what happens if you don't get form V? Like if you just melt chocolate in the microwave and let it cool down on the kitchen counter naturally without any intervention?
The fat molecules get completely confused. They crystallize randomly into this chaotic mix of form 1, form 2, and form 3.
And what does that look like visually? Because I feel like I've seen this.
It looks terrible, to be honest. Okay. The resulting chocolate will be very soft, it'll melt instantly and messily all over your fingers, and the fats will actually migrate up to the surface.
Oh, creating those streaks?
Yes, creating these dull, dusty, sort of grayish-white streaks all over the surface of the chocolate. That visual defect is professionally called fat bloom.
Fat bloom, which is exactly why professionals go through the arduous, terrifying process of tempering. Tempering is really just temperature manipulation to forcibly coax every single fat molecule to align perfectly into that form V beta crystal.
Precisely. You're manipulating the geometry. For dark chocolate, the exact scientific process requires you to melt the mass up to 115 degrees Fahrenheit or 46 degrees Celsius.
To shatter the old crystals.
Exactly. To completely shatter all existing crystal structures. Then you rapidly cool it down to 82 degrees Fahrenheit or 28 degrees Celsius to encourage those specific beta crystals to start forming. Finally, you carefully rewarm it to exactly 90 degrees Fahrenheit or 32 degrees Celsius.
The sweet spot.
Yes. That final temperature is the magic sweet spot where only form V crystals can physically survive. Now, milk and white chocolate require slightly lower temperatures than those due to the dairy.
It is literally like a...
And the melting methods we discussed earlier tie right into this perfectly. That ambient oven method we talked about, kept at a controlled, very low temperature, combined with a highly accurate digital thermometer. It makes holding chocolate at that 90-degree tempering sweet spot incredibly manageable for a home baker.
It takes all the panic out of it.
It really does. And, you know, I want to leave you with this final thought to mull over today. Mastering the polymorphic crystal structures of cocoa butter isn't just baking. It is genuine edible alchemy.
Edible alchemy, wow.
When you realize that controlling just a few degrees of heat can completely alter the physical state, the visual shine, and the auditory snap of a simple chocolate bar, it really makes you wonder, what other delicate ingredients sitting in our kitchens right now are waiting to be entirely unlocked with just a little more patience and scientific respect?
Oh, I absolutely love that, edible alchemy. What a truly perfect way to look at it. Next time you are in the kitchen, remember that you actually have the power to turn that stubborn emulsion into liquid silk.
Well, thank you for listening to the Pidcot Podcast. I will leave a link in the description below.
It has been a pleasure.
And one last reminder, head over to www.pidcot.com to check out all the incredible resources and best-selling ebooks we've drawn from today. Please subscribe to our channel if you haven't and activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads. Also, press the like button and rate us if you love our show. It helps in the recommendation algorithm so others can access it too. Thank you for being there with us, and don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating. Until next time, happy baking.